Welcome to Season 1 of Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with disability leaders each week about career, life, and technology. I'm Nikki Nolan.
And I'm Sam Prue. Let's get started.
We're so excited to have you here today. If you could just introduce yourself.
Absolutely. My name is Ian Price. My pronouns are he, him. And CEO and founder of iCan Resource Group. And the description, I am 39. I am physically disabled in an electric wheelchair. I use a ventilator, which you'll probably hear in the background. And I am bald, and I have a red beard and a giant smile.
Welcome.
Amazing. Love the beard. I'm a fellow beard aficionado myself.
Yes, love it.
So to get started, we would love to know your story. What got you into your line of work?
Honestly, I think it was a bit of necessity. I went to school. My big dreams were to take psychology and become a psychiatrist. And after a number of years in university and understanding that in the winter, especially here in Canada, that I would get sick and I would have to drop out. And then the next summer, I would try to catch up with my schooling. And the following winter, the same thing would happen. And I just realized that maybe I should try something different. And I've always been into computers and technology. And so that's kind of where it stemmed, was needing to figure out a plan D that didn't involve so much education.
I hear you there. I think you perhaps did the smarter plan B than I did. My original plan was to go and be a journalist. Plan B was cryptocurrency, and now I'm on plan C, so I don't know.
Too funny. Hey, I think those are all great plans.
Absolutely. You got into this line of work almost. The saying is the necessity is the mother of invention. So tell us about iCan Research Group. What are you up to?
Sure. So we have three main divisions. First is design. So yeah, I have a wonderful team of colleagues. We work on web pages, graphic design, obviously you name it, from a digital perspective, moving it to 3D printing and design, printed circuit board design. Videography, just an incredible group. Everybody has their own skill set. And so that's part one. And then part two would be assistive technology. We've developed a device that has been helping me quite a bit over the years. And then the third part, which is the newest sector, is accessible travel, because this is a huge passion of mine, and I felt that it was time to share not only my stories, but other people's stories and help inspire and encourage others to travel with complex needs, because I'm pretty high maintenance, and I figure if I can travel around the world, then anybody can.
Exactly. And, you know, the fascinating thing about that is you've been involved in basically all of the aspects of accessibility, from design and web and digital products, through developing assistive technology, through accessibility in physical spaces, through your work with travel. And so when you think about that, is there one kind of sector of accessibility or section or part of it that stands out as like the most challenging piece? Or are they all just equally challenging, but in different ways? Or is there some sort of thing that you went into thinking like, oh, this is going to be really hard and a really big lift, and it turned out to be like way easier than you thought it was going to be?
I think traveling to Southeast Asia was so much easier than I thought it would be once
really?
I arrived. Getting there, the logistics and preparing for the trip was a bit of a headache. Being on a ventilator can be somewhat challenging with airlines and such. And so the initial plan was to travel throughout Japan, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. And after figuring out the first three, I thought, you know what, this is too much on my plate. I shouldn't go to Vietnam. It's not as developed. I don't know anybody there, or at least I didn't at that time. And so I scrapped it. And then throughout travels, especially in Cambodia, I thought this is actually pretty easy. Like it doesn't matter that they don't have high rises and curbs that are accessible. I can just drive on the road in my chair with all the tuk tuks, and it's a piece of cake. I think it really changed my perspective on where I felt would be a large barrier, and it actually turned into a bonus, because having visiting a place where everything is pretty much level ground or the ground floor meant that I didn't have to worry about stairs and elevators and things like that. So it actually turned out to be a blessing. And if I could go back 2 years, I would have extended my holiday significantly.
Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, I know kind of from our perspective in North America and Canada and the US, do you think we get too fixated on technological solutions and maybe not on cultural solutions? I mean, I know there are obviously sort of cultural differences throughout East Asia. And sometimes we hear that as like, oh, well, they don't have a culture of accessibility. And you don't seem to have found that to be the case. So what do you think was it that made it easier? Was it just not seeing technology as a solution to everything? Or was it a different culture? Or like, where did that come from?
I think a bit of both. There's a lot less red tape. An example of that is we went to a nightclub, and they had provided a ramp. They built it many years prior. And so we thought, hey, perfect. Like, we need to check this place out. And we went inside, and we found that inside wasn't as accessible as the outside, ironically. And afterwards, the owner came up to us and said, you know what? I'm so sorry. I didn't even think about you being able to access all parts of the club on the inside. I just wanted to make the entrance very welcoming. And he said, you know what? If you come by next week, I'll have a crew here and they will build a ramp. And that's something that you don't really see here in Canada, at least I haven't, to my experience, that people are not quick to help. And I think that's very much a cultural thing as well. They're very, very kind. And like I said, the red tape, where you don't need to worry about permits. You just bring in a couple of friends and some cement, and you start fabricating.
Yeah, so it's easier for the people who want to do it to do it. But it's very interesting to me. We also talk a lot in Canada and the United States about the ADA, about compliance, about laws, about forcing people to do the right thing. Do you think it works? I mean, some people say, oh, well, it doesn't work, but it's better than nothing. There's some sort of opinions that like, oh, well, we've got to change hearts and minds, but in the meantime, the law is a good stopgap. And there's some feelings that, oh, this is all we need. We just got to make the law. I mean, with your experiences in East Asia, how does that sort of maybe change your feelings about accessibility and regulation and all of this stuff that we have in North America?
Okay, I should know that it is important to have regulations. Mm-hmm. I think that no two ramps are the same. And I've been to countries where I wouldn't even consider it a ramp. I would consider it a jump or just a drop off. Like, yes, it is. Yeah, there is a slope to it, but it takes three people to hold my chair so I don't tip over. So I think that, yeah. Regulations are important. I know some of the places I've traveled to, especially transportation, it has been quite sketchy, where we'll just remove the seats out of the vehicle and then pull a piece of plywood. Or I know in Mexico, a friend of mine borrowed a piece of his neighbor's fence and turned that into a ramp. And that's not for everybody. Tokyo, specifically, I was absolutely blown away at how inclusive they are with everything, not just the people with physical disabilities, but their visuals. Why? I think that they really set the gold standard, in my opinion, at least for the traveling I've done, the places I've seen, that if I were to look for a golden world book on how to do it properly. I think that Japan and specifically Tokyo has it figured out.
It sounds like you love to travel. What are some of the ways that you've discovered to overcome some of the challenges that arise with travel?
Networking, finding people all over the world that are like-minded, that are visionaries, that some are physically disabled, some are not. It really doesn't matter. I think finding the right people ahead of time and to ask the questions of, like, is it accessible? What is your definition of accessibility? And then from there, figuring out if it is a realistic adventure. Because there are places that I would love to go to, but being on a ventilator, it would be so challenging that it would take the fun out of it. And I'm a thrill seeker. So that's a bold statement, but it is true. I think that as soon as you find that network and they're able to tell you where they went, somebody said that it was cheating to me once, and I don't think it's cheating because I'm not pulling somebody else's itinerary and then following it to the letter. It's just learning the hotspots, similar to somebody using a travel guide of like where best waterfalls are and the best restaurants. I think of it the same way of where are the most accessible waterfalls.
Wow. So this book that you, is it a real thing? Is there something out there that's like the traveler's guide to accessible places? Does that exist or it's just amongst your network?
I wish. I think that would be a magical book. I have not found it yet, but there are so many resources online, whether it's social media, travel websites, you name it. Once you start asking the question online, I feel that the community globally are very responsive and they're willing to help.
Yeah, I love that you sort of mentioned kind of networking, because there seems to be, speaking from my perspective as someone who's blind, as a screen reader user, sometimes there seems to be this feeling in the disability community that we should be independent, like to the exclusion of all else. And if we can't do it independently by ourselves, we shouldn't do it. Right? Like,
yes.
And how do we negotiate that? Like, it's something that I struggle with, right? How much dependence is too much, but then how much independence is just cutting yourself out of an experience because you don't want to depend on someone?
Absolutely. And I wonder sometimes about my choices when I travel, because nowadays I try to pick some of the most challenging locations. And then I hear from others who say, I'm Buddha on Associate, and there were accessible vehicles that brought me from the airport to the hotel, and every restaurant had a ramp. And then I'm thinking back of like throwing my wheelchair in the back of a pickup truck and having 8 guys try to carry me up the side of a hill. And I think everybody has their own idea, but what is their limit?
What's the limit for you? You said there are some places, like what are the key things that make a place a no-go for you?
It's a tough one. I'm very stubborn, but for many years, I've been trying to figure out how to experience Burning Man. And I know that it's very dusty, and I've had issues with my ventilator overheating in certain climates. And then so I wonder, maybe there's an inventor out there that can build me some Frankenstein air filtration system that I can connect to my ventilator and will allow me to experience this. But yeah, that, I think that one right now is, I'm still working on it, but it's a tricky one.
That's such an interesting answer, because Burning Man, compared to Japan, is a lot closer, probably a lot easier to get to. And yet it's something that you'd find very, very challenging. I think that really highlights what you were saying before, but it's a lot of it is about our own personal experiences and choices that we make.
I also love that the ways that you've discovered to overcome challenges hasn't necessarily been an assistive technology. It is networking and other humans. And that's really, really fun. I want to change this a little bit into what are some of the assistive technologies that you have developed.
Well, many years ago, my father and I worked on a project, and it's a device I'm still using to this day, actually. And it's because I can't swallow, and I use something similar to a dentist's office. It's a retractable straw, and it sounds very simple. And it is, to some extent, where I have some micro switches that I can press with my finger, and the suction machine turns on, the straw extends, and then as I remove my finger off the switch, then the straw retracts, and the suction machine turns off, and I can keep talking. And prior to that, I relied on friends and family and caregivers to assist me about every 10 to 15 minutes. At one point, I had a straw that was connected to a switch on the ground that I would kick with the foot plate of my wheelchair. And that worked for many years while I was at home. But this is something that I can use wherever I am in the world. And it gives me a lot of confidence that I can be independent and not rely on somebody every 15 minutes or so. So that's an open source project that I'm quite proud of.
Amazing. And you know, sometimes it's the simplest products and inventions that are the best, right? Because they don't break, you can depend on them, and they're easy to use and to maintain and to fix. There's this desire to build GPS enabled electric canes and wheelchairs that can climb stairs and are robots that walk, right? And maybe, yes. Maybe that's not what we should be doing.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I wish it had some sort of laser timing system where it would hit my mouth in the exact same spot every time. But no, you're right. My dad, who's a retired engineer, has taught me a lot over the years where I try to connect an Arduino to everything. And he says, listen, it doesn't need to be that complicated.
Yeah, sometimes simplicity really, really can solve things. Our environment is getting ever more complex.
Yeah, but hey, it has its applications, okay? I think that it's something that I love. And yeah, they're sometimes the simplest solution. It's just like a wooden stick. And other times, some sort of a brain interface. So I like to learn about, well, all new technology and really understand how it will benefit us. And you're right. Sometimes you just have to step back and say, is this really needed?
Yeah. It's, you should never decide not to do something because it's too complex, but you should never do something simply because it is complex, right?
Well said.
I hope you're enjoying listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it, but it's sponsors that make it all possible. So let's take a brief break to talk about our wonderful sponsor.
Hi, I'm Lynette. I'm the community manager at Fable. I'm also a full-time screen reader user. And before becoming the community manager, I started out as a member of our community of accessibility testers. Now I help build and support the community of assistive technology users that powers everything we do here at Fable. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your accessibility journey. Fable can help you do that. From improving your team's accessibility training with Fable Upskill to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage, we can help you take the next step on your accessibility journey. To learn more, please check out our website at makeitfable.com.
We're back from our break. Thank you for listening to our sponsor. You're the president of the Kelowna chapter for Disabled Sailors Association. What got you into sailing?
Honestly, I was downtown one day and this gentleman came out of nowhere and said, hey, have you ever tried sailing? And I thought he was crazy. I said, well, of course not. Look at me. And he said, nonsense. Here's the number for the organization in town. And I'd really like you to phone them and try it out. And so I showed up with a roll of duct tape. And we literally taped me into a boat, and it was so much fun that I came home and we started thinking about different ways for me to operate the sailboat. And after about a year or so, I joined their board of directors and then eventually became the president. And that's such an incredible experience to be racing this 16-foot sailboat and only using my thumbs because that's how I operate the boat.
That's amazing. What is your favorite part of sailing? I recently took some sailing classes and I would say I got very overwhelmed and scared. And I'm also dyslexic. So I was like, oh, wait, am I tacking? What am I doing right now? What do you enjoy the most about sailing?
I think you nailed it. I think it's that that things change so rapidly. Your environment changes, the wind shifts, and you have to adapt to it as fast as possible. And even though the boats we use are very safe and untippable, there's always that unnerving part where the boat is leaned over so much that there's actually water coming in. And I look down to see if my ventilator is safe. And yeah, that it gives me that adrenaline rush that I'm always looking for.
What would you say is your most significant success in your life?
That's hard. I don't know. There's so many incredible things that I've been fortunate enough to experience, whether it's like starting my own company, being able to travel, just living your quote unquote normal life to the best of my abilities. I think that every day and every week I'm faced with a new obstacle, and that's what keeps me going. And like, I know that's a cheesy answer, but I can't think of one specific thing that really makes it for me. It's everything combined.
Interesting. I mean, there's kind of the two ways to see challenges and obstacles, right? As a new challenge and as something fun, or as something that is overwhelming and that is irritating and that is annoying. Was that like an intentional shift that you sort of had to make in your philosophy as you live your life? Or have you just always felt like, oh, I just love challenges?
I don't think I've always loved challenges to that extent. I think that both of my parents are go-getters and very, very good at overcoming the obstacles. And they've taught me over the years not to stress about the little things and how to problem solve and how to have that never say no attitude.
It's something that I feel a lot as well, that upbringing and education and role models are so important and so critical. And sometimes it can feel like maybe for the younger folks coming up, and perhaps for some of the folks, you know, in university or college who are listening and have a disability and who are just starting this career, their careers and setting out on the journey, we perhaps don't do as well by them as we should or could. And I wonder, A, what tips do you sort of have for, you know, the next generation coming up? And B, where should we be focusing our time and energy to make sure that the next generations have it better than we did, right?
Yeah, I think the first part of your question would be never give up, because like you're going to meet people that say, no, you can't do that, or that's a horrible idea. But if you truly feel like that's something that you need to do in your life, that you need to accomplish this, then I say go for it. Like, it doesn't always work out the way that you hope it will, but that's just part of life. If you don't try these things and push yourself out of that comfort zone, then you're really missing some fantastic opportunities. The second part of that question, I think it's important for people to be treated equally. I think that for me, I went to public school and there were very few people with physical disabilities in my small town. And I think that worked in my favor. Like, my friends joke that they think I forget that I'm in a wheelchair at times. And I know that they forget I'm in a chair because they keep trying to pass me things, even though I can't use my hands. It's good that the principal and teachers over the years have kind of picked up on that. And they've really tried to not treat me any different. And I think that has helped me immensely, because then I don't feel different Like, sure, there are things that have needed to be adapted for me, and that's fine, but not to dwell on it, just to do it and move on and have everybody working together.
Mm. Yeah, maybe we sometimes get too focused on our disabilities and our differences.
You and Sam both had such wonderful parents that seemed like they were really, really supportive and helpful. I think growing up for me, feeling different or othered and then having it reinforced to me that I have a disability or that I'm different has really, I think, psychologically messed me up a little bit that I have to like overcome it. I just want to get to that place where people just treat me like they would treat any other human. And I love hearing you say that, that people were able to get to this point where you didn't feel othered. I think that's so important to hit on. I think it's so important for people not to feel othered.
Yeah, and everybody's different. Everybody grows up in a different environment.
Absolutely. The number of my low vision friends who have had experiences where they have been told directly by someone they barely know that they are faking it is truly astonishing. Whereas when you're completely blind, nobody gets to say that to you, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I just found out that restrooms, like handicap restrooms, flush quieter, and so they're actually better for autistic people. So like,
really,
you can't. Yeah, I just learned this from an autistic creator, and she was like, I always use the handicapped bathroom because it's quieter and makes me feel less stressed out. And I also been told that if you are also like neurodiverse or on the spectrum, you can actually board an airplane earlier as well when they ask if you need more time, because traveling is overwhelming. And I just learned about that too, and I was like, none of those things have I ever taken advantage of or even thought about, but it's really cool to know that there are things out there that make people's lives better, and we should be trying to gravitate towards the things that make our lives simpler and easier.
Yeah, and I think even in our communities, right, maybe we overjudge each other. How many times have I been tempted to sort of judge the person obviously not disabled taking up the elevator or using the handicap washroom, right? How do we... I don't know. How do we navigate that? It's hard.
What are some like problems or challenges that you've solved that you've just like, wow, it's made a world of difference in my life?
I think that technology is advancing so rapidly, and I'm so fortunate because I do have a neuromuscular disorder. That means I become weaker every year or two. And I think that as technology is improving and evolving so quickly that it really makes me feel like there's hope. And some of the things other people take for granted, like being able to turn the lights on and off in my house by voice, that's something that wasn't around when I was younger. And believe me, I think I drove everybody crazy for the first 6 months because I just like drive around the house randomly turning things on and off, and it was the best. I know my van, the first time I figured out that I could connect a module to it where I could open the door and extend the ramp on my own, I did it over and over to the point where I killed the battery in my vehicle in my driveway, just because it's something that I had seen that people do and people have been helping me with for so many years, and now I could do it on my own. So I think that those are the little things that keep me going, that put a smile on my face and together make me feel so independent. And I'm actually more independent now than I ever have been, even though 10 years ago I could shake your hand and today I can smile and wiggle my thumb.
As an entrepreneur, as the founder, CEO of a company, you don't see enough people with disabilities doing that. And what are some of the biggest challenges that you have found in business doing entrepreneurship, and how do you overcome them?
I think in the beginning, I received a lot of mixed messages of tell people that you're disabled and you will get more work. And then other people said, don't tell people that you're disabled because they're not going to hire you. And it was really confusing because I heard these polar opposite suggestions from so many people. And I was shocked. I thought, like, is this really the thing that I should be focusing my attention on. Like I didn't take business, but I figure the good accountant, a good lawyer, figuring out my business focus. There were so many things that were confusing in the beginning. That I think that was really hard. That and the plus side, I think that the real reason why I started it is to be able to make my own hours so that if I do get sick and I'm off work for a month, that I'm not going to lose my job and I can jump back into it and start up where I left off. Sorry, absolutely. I don't know if I answered your question there.
Yeah, that was great. As someone else who's there now, who's hearing those polar opposite messages, what is the one true ultimate answer? No, I'm kidding. But like, what worked for you? Was it disclosing that you had a disability or was it not?
Yeah, I think for me, it's very apparent that I have a disability. So even if I tried to hide it, you know, within the first 3 seconds of meeting me, I have used it to my advantage, but in a way where I'm helping others. So for example, the websites that we design, making sure that they are inclusive is very important. And it doesn't matter what kind of a business my customer has. I need them to understand that this site will be accessible to all. And some of them say, well, is that going to cost extra? I don't really need that functionality. That's not what I'm looking for. And it's like, listen, you came to the guy in the wheelchair. The guy in the wheelchair is going to make sure that your website is inclusive. So I think in the long run, it does help.
And perhaps it gets you, as they always say, sometimes you need to fire your customer, right? It gets you perhaps the right customers.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and then after they understand that, wait a second, if I have you make a website that everybody can access, then more people are going to visit it. Therefore, my revenue flow will increase. Then they get excited. But in the beginning, they don't really connect the dots. Sometimes. Not everybody, but sometimes.
Yeah, disabled people is such a large market of people. And one lens, which another guest of ours went through, is like, it's just such a big market. Why would you want to exclude people from a revenue source?
Yes. Yeah, I know. I noticed that quite a bit, actually, whether it's through the digital industry or travel. I think everywhere that people are slowly starting to understand that the people like that quote-unquote disabled person, they might actually have money and they might have family and friends, and for me, as I said before, I'm pretty high maintenance. When I travel, it's not just me hopping on an airplane, it's me and an entourage of people. So if you think about the additional revenue that these companies are making, because I show up at a hotel or a restaurant or a transportation, you name it, and possibly I'll have 2, 3, 5 people with me.
One of the things that I've been seeing a lot in the news is that with travel, especially travel with wheelchairs, that a lot of wheelchairs get damaged. Have you had any issues with traveling and working with airlines and having any issues with your chair being damaged?
Fortunately, no. I have a custom-built shipping crate that we put my wheelchair into, and then they forklift that onto the aircraft, and that has saved my wheelchair multiple times. I know from some of the longer overseas trips that my crate comes back not quite as shiny as it was initially, but I've had chunks missing. I've had holes through the side of it. And it's the armor that the wheelchair needs.
What can people do that can't necessarily? Do you have any? I mean, sorry to put you on the spot, but have you thought
That's
of any
okay.
solutions for like helping people who maybe can't afford to like create their wheelchairs be able to travel? I mean, you're a travel like expert and solutionist. I'm just curious.
Yes. Okay. So there is an organization called the Tetra Society, and they have volunteers all over North America, and they now have the plans to build something similar to what I have. So anybody in a power wheelchair or that has sensitive equipment, then I would recommend reaching out to them and see if one of their volunteers can help.
Oh, that's wonderful. I just saw somebody recently who was able to convince the airline to allow her to get an extra seat and strap her wheelchair into the seat. She has a compactable wheelchair.
Right.
And at first they said no, but then she was able to convince them and she did it both directions. And then the captain of the airplane came out and was like, thank you for teaching me that. I didn't even realize that that was possible. So I do think there's a lot of advancement that needs to happen with the airlines around education and things like that to make it more accessible for people to travel.
Oh, for sure. And they're learning, and I think that they are open to learn. There's a huge movement now for removing the seats from aircrafts and then allowing people power wheelchairs and manual wheelchairs to just roll on and be strapped down similar to a bus or a taxi. And I think that will be incredible. When that day comes, I will be plane jumping for the rest of my life. I can't wait. And we're surfers.
I hope so. I hope that comes really, really soon. That sounds like an amazing advance. What are some myths around disability that you want to bust?
I think the biggest one would be that we are not employable and that our time is not valuable. I know I fell for this, and it taught me a lot of very great experience. I volunteered for the first number of years, and then I realized, wait a second, why am I volunteering when the person beside me is getting paid to do the same exact job? So I think that's something that really needs to change, and it saddens me that I've had people recently that are very educated, very qualified, and they feel like they're not employable because everywhere they provide their resume to, as soon as they find out they're disabled or they have some sort of limitations, that they're rejected.
And I think there's sometimes the guilt, right? It's like, well, we want you to do accessibility testing to make the product more accessible, so you should do it for free, or we're trying to, you know, do a good thing, so you should do it for free, right?
Yes. We're trying to help you, but we're not going to pay you. So, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. I just talked with Elsa Hunasan. She's a deafblind writer, and she just did an ableism in the workplace thing for the ERG that I lead. And she's been trying to find a job for 2 years. As soon as they find out she's disabled, they ask her if she can do the job. And it's just so incredibly insulting because disabled people have so much to give and so much to provide. And it is worth paying for and is worth being employed. There's no question there. I'm just like, it's just like it is very frustrating.
Yeah. And I think the frustration too comes on for context. I work at an accessibility testing company that works with folks with disabilities. And the other thing that I frequently find myself saying to people is stop agreeing to do this for free. Right. It's very frustrating. You need to raise awareness in our own community. Right. I wonder how we do that.
Yeah. It's hard. I know in the beginning, starting like web design, that somebody would say, yeah, but my niece or my nephew will do it for half the price. I'm like, well, okay. Right. After they build your website and you're not happy with it, then feel free to give me a call. Like, I'm not going to lower my prices. Right? I think the same can be said for like accessibility testing and auditing. Like, sure, maybe there is somebody out there that will do it for free because they're bored or they feel like they're not employable. But I think you get what you pay for. But I know it's a cliche, but it's true. And we are experts.
Exactly. If you give someone free advice, sometimes they treat it with the value that they paid for.
Yes.
Oh, that's so great. So we're getting close to the end, and we love to end with this. What is the first piece of technology you remember using, and what was it for?
My first piece I remember would be, I had a toy called the Battle Iron Claw, and it was an RC tank. that had a mechanical arm attached to it. And my dad modified the controller, so I was able to operate it. And it was the best thing ever. I was able to pick up my G.I. Joes and my action figures and move them around the house. Things that I wanted to do with my hands. And this was something that allowed me that independence and that creativity.
Yeah. And that's so amazing that it starts out as like a piece of mainstream technology that we modify to suit our needs, right? It's
yes.
the invention and the creativity in this community that's really exciting.
Now I just need a life-size version of it.
Absolutely. I mean, I just need a tank. Never mind.
There's such amazing innovation that happens in the disabled space that I just think is so cool and just so creative.
This is a conversation that is ongoing, and you're doing such great things in the space and kind of so involved in every aspect. Where can people find you? Where can people keep up with you? What do you have that you'd like to promote on your end?
Sure. This sounds like a very shameless pitch, but I think it's important to talk about. I work with an organization here in British Columbia called Technology for Living, and one of our programs is providing assistive devices and technology to people with physical disabilities at no cost. And I highly recommend anybody in the AT field to look us up, technologyforliving.org, and learn from our business model, because it is possible to provide free assistive technology to people. It is a thing, and I wish I could see more of it globally. Visit my website, icanresource.ca, and please feel free to send me a message, and I'd love to connect.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's been really great.
This was so exciting. I'm so glad we got to talk.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan. Edited and produced by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber. Theme music is created by F.A. Ackman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram @DisabilityBandwidth or on our website at disabilitybandwidth.com.